This Mother's Day, celebrate the extraordinary women in your life with a heartfelt gift from Blue Nile. Whether it's for your mom, a mother figure, or yourself as a mom, find that perfect piece to express your love and appreciation. Explore Blue Nile's exquisite pearls and mesmerizing gemstones that she's sure to love. Enjoy fast shipping options like guaranteed free shipping and returns. Make this Mother's Day unforgettable with a piece from Blue Nile. Right now, get up to 50% off at BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Sans Pants Radio, Australia's most family-friendly podcast network.
Hey everyone, welcome to Bookish. I'm George Dimeros. This is a show where we ask you what's your story and what does it say about you. Today on the show, I have a gentleman who's worked at Every Cloud Productions, the production company, for 3 years. He's also had a bunch of side hustles, including chili oil, bathroom tiling, and kids' books, as well as his own podcast. So please welcome to the show, Mr. Matt Kazakos. How are you doing, Matt?
Good, George. How are you?
I'm good. How's that summary? Did I nail it?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. Some of the side hustles are still currently happening, hilariously, but the tiling has been put to bed.
That is probably, what was the tiling one? That's actually was a side business you started.
No. It was a job that I got throughout uni when I realized that I was like burning through cash very quickly, and I was like, gonna have to maybe earn some money through a job other than pizza delivery, which was, you know, $40 cash on a Friday night from my local. So I contacted a family who were good friends of my own who had given my older brothers jobs throughout their schooling, and they didn't have anything going for in their little kind of company that they ran, and one of their daughters had just gotten together with this guy who was a tiler. And long story short, he called me and was like, hey, mate, like, I need a laborer. Do you want to jump on board for a few weeks? And that ended up being 4 years. Like, every winter and summer break from uni, I would go and just tile bathrooms with this guy, Lee, who was super lovely guy.
I rate that because, like, you were doing, obviously, like, yeah, I did mention it, but you did screenwriting at VCA, right?
So yeah, I was doing a fine arts course and also, like, yeah, and then hanging out with tradies throughout the rest of the week, which was pretty good mix.
That's perfect, I reckon. That's way better. You'd be humanizing people, which, like, I think people in the arts can sometimes have a habit of dismissing, like, as a group, I think, a lot of the time. So
yeah, definitely. Even demonizing to some degree, but no, I definitely had a good balance. VCA, like I went to the Melbourne kind of arts college, Victorian College of the Arts, and that was a great experience. And I had an awesome, like, the course was fantastic, but I definitely stuck out a little bit there as, like, it was really funny. I got pegged as like a jock, and just looking at me, like, I'm like 5'7", like I weigh like a feather, like I'm not, you know, and I'm not very athletic mainly, so
compared to VCA people.
Yeah, that's the thing. It was purely because, you know, in comparison, you know, I could kind of kick a ball and hold a hammer, and it was like, oh, he's just an alpha jock dick. And I was like, no, I like storytelling, what do you mean? It was
are you gonna come bully us?
yeah exactly.
This is our space.
I would walk into the campus holding like a soccer ball or something, and it was like I was carrying a gun or something. Like, people were just like, what the hell are you doing? Like, that's not what we do here, you know. It was like it was like a prop for the theater company or something.
It's the only way you could justify it. Yeah, that's a
yeah. Yeah, but it was great fun.
Pretty funny. Yeah, no doubt. That's a healthy mix, I would say. Sometimes people can fall into the, like, yeah, going down that stuff too much sometimes. You see it in comedy as well, where just people like, everyone exists in a bubble. It's, you know, the best example is actually, from a comedy point of view, is Melbourne Comedy Festival. Obviously, everyone who's in comedy knows about the Melbourne Comedy Festival. And like, I'm always talking to them, I'm like, guys, you understand, Most people don't even know this is on. Like, yes, it gets advertised everywhere a billion times, but like, you don't get it. A normal person, this is just another thing in the year.
Yeah.
It's not like their life depends on it. They'll all realize maybe a week in.
Yeah.
But like, it's not the big deal that, yes, it's on TV and it's everything, but still, it's not as big as you think. So, yeah, that helps having a lot of friends who have jobs and kids and stuff like that.
Yeah, just different people who walk different paths in life, have different perspectives, you know, enjoy different interests. You know, it's I think it makes you understand and appreciate and empathize with people a lot better if you have connections into those little worlds, even if it's just like working a job in that industry for a few years, you know.
Yeah, and I think it's easy to understand. I always think to understand is not to justify, but it's okay to understand why people might have opinions, which you can disagree with and be like, that's wrong. And you're allowed to disagree with it and say it's wrong, but you're also nothing wrong with understanding it as well.
Yeah, 100%.
Which is a part I think people get confused 100%. About. Like, I get where these people are coming from, even if I completely disagree with them.
Yeah,
and I think 100%. People sometimes lose that.
Yeah, and you can see that they're coming from a good place. And if anything, if nothing more, it gave me, like, it kind of sounds cliche, but it definitely gave me that experience of like, you know how you hear people like in the arts, it's like, oh, they've never worked a hard day in their life. It's like, well, first of all, they probably definitely have, because just working in the arts is pretty hard anyway. But getting up at like 4 a.m. in the winter to go out to like, you know, Broadmeadows to tile, you know, like all that kind of, and mix concrete and all that kind of stuff. It, you know, it's something I'm glad that I've done. I'm glad that I have done, but while I was doing it, it was like, oh my God, this is terrible.
This is not what I signed up for.
Yeah, yeah.
All right. I'm an artist. Yeah. These hands are made for writing, not for tiling.
Yeah, no, they shouldn't have calluses on them.
Yeah. That's hilarious. Yeah, true. Okay. So let's start with the book and then we'll jump into other stuff as we go. So let's get started with that. So you've picked a classic, but your book of choice for today is?
Tomorrow When the War Began. By John Marsden.
John Marsden. Sorry. I was going to say James Marsden. So for anyone who doesn't know, which I feel like, I wonder if it's still as popular now, but anyways, for people who don't know, basically a classic Australian novel written back like 20 years ago, you'd say, something like that?
Yeah. I think it was 93, but I could be wrong.
30 years ago. Jesus, I'm old.
Yeah. So I think it's definitely in the 90s. Yeah.
So basically about a bunch of kids, an invasion. You never get told who the invaders are from a small Australian town, and these kids who kind of rebel against it, essentially.
Yeah.
That's a fair summary.
Pretty much, yeah.
And
I should say, like, I'm kind of, I don't know if this is cheating or anything, but I'm kind of nominating the whole series of books. It's about 6 or 7 books, because that's kind of how I read them as well. I got lucky in the sense that I kind of, having two older brothers, I kind of followed with whatever kind of interests or shows or sports or whatever they were kind of into. I kind of like tagged along, and if I enjoyed it, I would get the benefit of that. And Tomorrow When the War Began was a series that my middle brother, Adrian, read. And I think I didn't take to it very, very, I think because I'm 5 or 6 years younger than him. So when I read it, I think I was a little bit older than most people who would probably read it. I think I was about 14 or 15. But all of the books were out by that stage, and I read them over the course of like a summer. And obviously there's books like, you know, Harry Potter and Artemis Fowl and those kind of series that when we were kids were like seminal and like huge. And I definitely was into those. Some people are going to think I'm crazy for saying Harry Potter and Artemis Fowl in the same sentence, because some people be like, Artemis Fowl, what's that? It was big for me. But Tomorrow When the War Began...
That's showing your age being a bit of a generation younger, possibly.
Yeah, yeah. Tomorrow When the War Began was important for me, at least, because it was the most kind of absorbing and one of the most relatable reads that I had as a kid. It was obviously an Australian series, and it was set, I believe, either in kind of, I think probably the borderlands between Victoria and New South Wales. So I grew up in Victoria and kind of could get a sense of where everything was. It wasn't like a, you know, it felt very real. And I think for that reason, it was just so absorbing and engaging.
Right. Yeah. And I mean, I think it's a good read. Like I haven't actually read it since back when I read it when I was younger, but I feel like it was exciting the whole way through.
Definitely. And that's the thing. It's a bunch of things. It's not just like, you're right. You were saying, I think, It's about a bunch of kids, country kids, like farm kids who rebel against this kind of invading force. But throughout the series, it deals with things like grief and tragedy and ingenuity and friendship and, you know, strategy, like all these things that like these kids come up against as they're kind of entering early adulthood. And it was like it's an adventure story at its heart, but it's also just it's like a metaphor for basically growing up. I think the seminal moment in the book is after the invasion happens, or when the invasion happens, they're all camping in this place called Hell, which is just this part of the bush that they like. And when they go back into town and get a sense of what's happened, the first thing they do is all go back to Hell and all camp out and basically think, well, you know, we've got to wait this out. And if I remember correctly, it's a couple of the characters, Ellie, the main character, and Homer, who basically, you know, they get itchy feet and they say to the rest of the gang, like, guys, we actually can't wait this out. We actually have to act. We actually have to, like, this is a problem we need to face. And that sets in motion their whole story. And I think unless I'm grasping at straws, I think that's kind of like an important metaphor for just in general, like when life throws you like these big important moments, you can't just go and hide away from them. You've actually got to think about how you can deal with them, and it might be dangerous and scary and all these kind of things, and that's just part of it. So I think it's a very clever layered series of books.
Yeah, no, actually, now that you're saying that, that makes me think, and this is classic where you're like, the stuff you read before, you learned other things, but I'm guessing since you're a screenwriter, you would know all about Joseph Campbell and the hero's journey and all that stuff.
Yeah, yeah.
Pretty well. So that, like what you described, there's the classic like call to action and then like the will you or won't you, and then you actually act on it, but like I guess done more extreme because they actually run away, and that the call to action is almost internal for them. It's not as much external.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, they're very much thrust into their scenario, but they do have an out if they want it. They do have a way of they could just live on their supplies, hide out in the bush. But like at the end of the day, they might emerge into a world that they had no part in shaping and doesn't actually welcome them back, kind of thing. It could have been overtaken. It could have been overrun. So I think it's about them just kind of fighting for what they love and what they believe in. And I think that's, again, why you get so behind them throughout the series. Because I remember all the deaths and all the danger that they're in, it felt so so brutal and so real. And some of the sequences are really interesting because he doesn't shy away, Marsden the writer, he doesn't shy away from having these really realistic sequences where they're like stuck in a situation for like hours. So I remember one sequence where they're stuck up these trees for like 11 or 12 hours while these soldiers have kind of like zeroed in on them, and the main core characters are just kind of sitting there waiting, you know, in these really uncomfortable cold positions, unable to like piss, unable to eat, just waiting to try and escape. And then eventually I think it's just, there's a bunch of things, there's action and there's romance and all that kind of stuff, but it just felt really real.
Yeah. Spoke to you at that time.
Yeah, definitely. And that's the other thing. I think the books definitely put you in a position of asking yourself, what would you do in that scenario? So that's an interesting, that's a really interesting thing to pose to readers, I think, generally. You know, that's the whole thing about, you know, something like Breaking Bad, was that it made a lot of people say, what would you do for your family? Like, what would you be willing to sacrifice? Would you turn evil for your family in order to protect them, kind of thing? And that's why we're able to kind of back those kind of anti-hero characters that have come up so much in the last 10, 12, 15 years of TV. So, yeah, I think it definitely made me think about what I would do in that scenario. But also I think it opened up a lot of thoughts about, because I've lived a really lucky, privileged life. So I think more than anything, it probably made me think about how people deal with grief and tragedy and, you know, unexpected circumstances and things like that. I'm not sure if it made me realize anything or answer any of those, you know, kind of big questions, but it definitely got me thinking about them because, you know, as one of those lucky kids that, you know, I experienced death with my grandparents and my dog, you know, but not with anything that was like, you know, knock on wood, nothing that was like unexpected, if that makes sense. You know, you expect your grandparents to die, you expect your dogs to die. But in terms of actual hardship, I was very fortunate to have a really lucky childhood. I didn't actually realize how much this book meant to me before I started talking about it like this. I've never talked about it like this before. I just really liked it. It was a cool war story, man.
Yeah. Well, I mean, like, it's funny because, again, yeah, I'm stretching my memory to it's, and it's weird because, like, this is a long time ago for me. It was looking like 20 years potentially. But I do remember, like, even the trauma and the post-traumatic stress and all that stuff. It doesn't shy away. It's not a happy ending in terms of, like, the scars that remain. And
exactly, yeah. Yeah.
And some of the deaths are brutal because, yeah, I think that was one of the first books I read where it's like you liked the characters and they died so much, like, as in it was so tragic.
Yes.
And the friction that happened because of it as well was so real, kind of.
Yeah, and the tragedy of them just having to move on immediately, like, kind of, you know, just pack up and move on kind of thing, you know, oh, this person's dead, but, well, we got to get to the next thing because otherwise we'll be the same kind of thing. So, yeah.
So did you, for just a small change in topic, so your role, because I'm actually very interested. So in terms of production company, what is it you do there?
So I work in the development team, which is essentially just me and the head of content at EveryCloud and the creative head of creative. We basically just work together forming what's called a development slate. I'm very much almost like the youngest child of that company as well, because I'm like the third tier in the development. I do a bunch of things. I administrate writers' workshops and story rooms. So, like, that's the classic kind of, people know a little bit about what a plotting room is. It's like, you know, people go in a room and just kind of plot out the series and episodes for different shows. So I help, like, basically facilitate that. I send out the agreements and I contact the writers about who's going to be coming in to do those plotting workshops.
So is that purely a structural thing where people get in the room and do that sort of thing? Or is it like they're not writing the script?
No, they're not writing the script. Yeah, it's pretty much there's two forms of it. You can either do a story conference, which is they come in and we've already got content for them to work on. So it's already a base level. And then there's brainstorming, which is we've got like a little concept of an idea, but we need things like characters and world building and themes and, you know, how we want the show to work and stuff. So brainstorming is more like ground up stuff. Story conferencing is when they come in and we've got, it may be, say, a story conference for a second series of something. So they've already got the first series to base that on. They're just like coming up with ideas for, we do a lot of murder mysteries, for example. So it's like literally coming in and being like, all right, how do we kill, what's the murder in this first episode? How does this person die? Who kills them? What's the motive? What's the method? You know, it's like playing Cluedo with a bunch of writers, which is quite fun.
Really? That does sound actually pretty fun. Is that a show people know? What's your most popular one that I guess you guys have?
So EveryCloud is most known for Miss Fisher, which was on the ABC from 2012 to 2015. It's quite well known, like, globally as well. It's massive fan base over in America and in England. I actually, before I started working for the company, I actually thought that it was a British series because it's set in the 20s in Australia. So everyone kind of talks with that regal, you know, Australian-English kind of hybrid that hasn't quite become Aussie yet.
Yeah, that's amazing. I actually thought it was British as well. So that's
So we made that.
In terms of, it looks high, bud, you know what I mean? It looks good.
Yeah, they knocked it out of the park. Like, they did a fantastic job, and it's still a flagship of our company through that. We've done, and we also did a Miss Fisher movie, and they adapted it in China to a thing called Miss S. So it's a huge property for us. But we've in the meantime been branching out doing other things. We just did a series for Stan called Eden, a Christmas movie last year for Stan as well. But yeah, basically my job is essentially in a nutshell, it's working with the concepts that we have on our development slate. So the ideas for shows, and we're very much working towards what the market is calling for, and where the shows can fit in terms of having a home. We work with our ideas and our concepts that we have, and I help with the team of developers, basically take them hopefully from a very early stage of development all the way through to being pitch ready, and then fingers crossed, like, you know, eventually made into a series or a film or whatever, something like that.
Yeah, so I guess it's funny because, like, this is so interesting to me because it's a combination of, it's the classic arts and finance and commerce meeting each other, essentially.
Yeah. Yes.
Because people can be like, oh, it's so cold to just be basing things on demographics, but it's actually, well, no, you find the space and then you create within that space, is, I'm guessing, how you justify that sort of thing.
That's a good way to put it, yeah.
Yeah. So like, so is that what literally, so you're like, ah, oh, this is so hot right now. Is that?
I've never said that. Hopefully I don't, I never do. We like any company, and this is just how the industry works in general, the any production company in Oz or anywhere, in fact, would be looking as to what the market is kind of demanding just through how people watch things, what people are watching, you know, and that could just be as simple as like, hey, crime is really up right now kind of thing. Like, and not only is it up, but it can, murder mysteries in particular can be played, you know, throughout the day on any channel. You know what I mean? Because they're usually quite, you know, got a family-friendly rating. So there's things like that. And then there's other things like, okay, what do we want to make as a company? Like every cloud is very much like putting women in front, both in front of the camera and behind the camera. Like what shows can we kind of elevate so that we've got these strong female protagonists? You know, that's what our founders kind of set out to do 10 years ago. And are still doing now. So there's all those elements that, again, other companies would have their own prerogatives to kind of and principles to keep upstanding. But yeah, it's an interesting time to be in the industry purely because it's changing so rapidly due to these streaming services. Because I'm only, like you said at the start, 3 years into this job, and I got it quite quickly after university, which was just a combination of luck and good timing. And so I'm kind of like learning as I go, faking it till I make it, all that kind of stuff, and just kind of absorbing as much as I can in the meantime. And you know, everyone around me is like, oh, it's insane. Like the networks don't want drama anymore. And the SVODs are building up in Australia, you know, that we've got Stan and Netflix has come aboard, like all that kind of stuff. So there's plenty of opportunity, but there's also plenty of like shifting tides, I guess.
Would you say it's better now for Australian production than 10 years ago or worse? Or like, I mean, the general view of obviously Australian media in general, because I've got actor friends and they're like, it's just, it's very tough here. You know, it just doesn't compare to America and stuff like that. But do you think it's getting gotten better or worse?
I don't know. I think I guarantee, like, I don't know if I'm, all I can give you is my very limited opinion, but I think that definitely it would be tough. I think anytime we compare ourselves to LA,
yeah,
we're in trouble a little bit, because LA was literally a town that was built to make film and TV. It was founded on that principle, essentially. And so it's like comparing us to Germany or Japan for car making kind of thing. It's just, it's what they do. They're good at it, and it's what they do, and it's a huge part of their culture. And it's becoming a part of our culture. We have some great examples of film and television, but I think like a lot of what I've been watching the Olympics recently, and it's crazy how much we as a nation kind of try and punch above our weight and expect so much. Like, you know, it's always about the medal tally. It's all about how many golds have we got. It's all about, you know, and it's good to be ambitious, but it's also good to be like, hey, like we're a small nation. We don't need to be like the greatest ever kind of thing. And I think it's the same.
Having fun, guys.
Yeah, right? Man. Like, but no, literally I heard one of the commentators the other day be like, oh, a bronze medal is nothing to sneeze at. I was like, yeah, it's a Olympic bronze medal. Why would you sneeze at it? Like it's, and I think that's what happens a lot with just our culture a little bit, or especially with the Australian like film industry is people expect it to be as good as the American stuff or the British stuff. And I think definitely sometimes it can be, but I think we need to kind of temper those expectations a little bit maybe, and because we're in a bit of a catch-up game at the moment, I think.
Yeah, and I think it's a – I don't know. I'm a bit more – I feel like Australia's got a weird attitude towards the arts in some ways, I feel like. So it's like just – and I think it's actually potentially maybe in the industry as well. I don't know. It just seems like they're a bit scared to take certain risks and to maybe present things like – they're not willing to be as messy, and it might just be a case where the market's not big enough for them to feel like they can take these risks. So you end up with this a bit less like interesting stuff going on.
Yeah, I think so. I think so. And I think it's also just a how can I phrase this? I think, let me temper what I said before about just us expecting a lot. I think I'll give you an example. In America, to plot an episode of, let's bring it back to something like Mad Men or I don't know, Breaking Bad again. It takes
you do Bad Men this time, John.
Yeah, it takes them or that not it, it doesn't take them. They have something like 6 or 7 weeks to plot an hour of drama with like 7 intelligent writers. So that's why when you see someone like Walter, it's crazy, right? When you see someone like Walter White get out of a situation in 2 minutes that you thought he was going to be killed in, it's like, he's a genius. It's like, no, he's, well, he is because his character is, but the solution that he found in 2 minutes, it took like 7 intelligent men and women, like 7 weeks to come up with or 6 weeks to come up with and make airtight. In Australia, the first writer's room I was ever part of, it was a wonderful room. It was really intelligent, really kind people. They had to plot and execute a series of 8 episodes, and they had like 3 days an episode. 3 days, right? And so it's like the time, and that's purely because there's not enough funds in the industry at the moment. There's not enough funds diverted to the arts that allow for the time needed to create premium content. I'm not saying it can't be done. It still can't be done well. There's plenty of great series on or movies and stuff that Australia makes. But in terms of the money that goes into the industry, it doesn't allow for the time needed to create good stuff. And that's why a lot of stuff that is made can seem rushed.
Yeah. It's a classic, like, yes, you can still get magic striking even with that time frame, but the fact is the odds are just going to be way less because you just don't have the time to, yeah. That makes sense. So, look, if we are talking about Tomorrow When the War Began, and look, I'm probably guessing you might be limited out of politeness from giving your full raw opinion about things like this, but what did you think of the movie that came out for Tomorrow When the War Began?
I was a fan. I was a fan. I thought it was... I didn't think... I'm trying to remember because there's been a few iterations that have come out. I have not seen the ABC series, but I've heard... And I think that was a combination of, I think I'd probably outgrown it a bit and I'd seen and read and I was kind of over the series at that point. I didn't need to dive back in. But no, I thought the movie, and this is not this, you know, people will probably think, oh, he's in the industry. He knows people who made it. He can't say anything. I actually genuinely thought the movie was awesome. Not like absolutely outstanding, 100% on Rotten Tomatoes kind of thing. But I thought it was good enough definitely to merit a sequel. I think they only would have gotten better. I thought it did exactly, like, obviously there's a few, like, a little bit of corny acting here and there, you know, but I thought in terms of the and that's acting, I think corny acting, I think, is a combination of, I would blame most of that on writing. Just because I think if something sounds corny, it's because it doesn't sound realistic, maybe, or it sounds a bit over, like a bit try hard or whatever the word is. I don't know. I when I write, I read out my scenes out loud, and it, you know, the first few passes at things always sound terrible because it's really hard to actually gauge how people talk, and not only how people talk, but how to balance how people talk with actually what information do you need them to, like, need them to convey. So overall, I thought, like, genuinely the writing and the adaption was really good. I enjoyed the movie. I went and saw it hilariously with my brothers and mum and dad because we were all, like, invested in the series. I think we'd all read them at some point.
Oh, really? Oh, yeah, because your brothers were... Yeah.
Yeah. But no, I thought
the experience now. This book,
I know, right? It was like a big family outing. No, I thought the movie was good. I thought the action sequences were great.
No, I actually agree. I think it was. I think it did have moments of cheesiness, but overall, like, it did quite well. The only thing I thought was still remembered to this day, and I don't remember what happens in the books with this, but the trope of the religious person who doesn't want to commit violence,
yeah,
then murdering like 500
she literally
people.
Mows down like she literally mows down like 40 dudes
and it's treated as a glorious thing.
Yeah,
it's like,
yeah,
what are you doing?
Yeah. It's almost you can almost see there's almost a moment where Jesus, like, pops his head out of the clouds and he's like, it's okay, like, go ahead, and, like, gives her a wink, and then it's like, oh, like, divine intervention, great.
Okay, it's like I always think that's hilarious whenever they do that. It's like, man, killing people is wrong. Like, and if you have to do it, it's tragic that you have to do it. It's not this awesome, just this child murdering
really glorious. Yeah.
So many people.
Yeah.
I was dying with laughter in the cinema when I watched it. It was just so ridiculous. Like,
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Yeah, I don't know. That's, do you get that with, like, and that's probably a victim of me having some, like, appreciation for, not appreciation, maybe there's no way I can come out of this now without sounding like a massive douchebag. Like, where, like, I've seen a lot. I've done a lot of storytelling, read a lot about it, done all that stuff of books and stories in general. So usually, like, I do take into account a little bit more than maybe the, just that feeling in that moment of awesomeness at something. I'm always looking at like what it means and the underlying motives and stuff. So that means that sometimes that impacts my viewing experience of something. I'm watching a movie or reading a book even. If I'm like, ah, this is pandering, or this no one's thought about this, or if this doesn't feel thematically in line with what it should be, like, kind of, I feel like judgment. Is that something that must happen with you, surely?
It happens with me in a sense of, like, I think about what the experience of writing it would have been like. I think I'm still honing, like, I watch a lot of YouTube kind of video essays about either a film that I hated or a series that I loved, or just anything, like, that analyzes the craft of kind of writing and storytelling and stuff. I find quite interesting just to have on in the background, almost like a podcast. But I think I'm definitely still honing my ability to be able to intelligently criticize things and work out what the problem with something is, because whenever I hear other people do it, I'm like, you know, we did it at the end of every semester at uni. We would put our scripts up on the board and read them, and I would always come out with, like, hey, that was wonderful, like, you've the characters are so good, and I love this part and I love that part, and, you know, maybe you could tweak that or whatever. And then a couple people in the back would say these really, and it was never meant for, it was never harsh or anything, it was just criticism, because that was the whole point of showing it to people. Or, like, constructive feedback, it was, they would come out with these really intelligent, like, fixes for these problems that sometimes I wouldn't even see, but then I would agree with immediately. I'd be like, that is just such a good way to explain and get a better result out of the script. So definitely still working on that for myself. But definitely what is weird, when I see a movie, the first thing that happens, the first shot, no matter how kind of quiet my brain is at that point, the first scene, I will do the line of the big print in my head, and I won't even try it. Like, it's not a thing. It's not, I'm not, like, flexing. It just happens. Like, it's like, you know, a plane lands at the airport, and, like, it's just like a reflective.
All right. Like, how would that be written? Yeah. Yeah. Music plays as the scene opens on a 1970s era airport. Or
exactly. Yeah. 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 That was way better than what I just did. So exactly. Yeah. Take that. Exactly.
I had more time to think about it. So, So obviously movies are a big part of what you do, but, like, do you read a lot as well?
I wish I was more of an avid reader. I have started, I think COVID has helped me, like, just read a lot more in general. I think probably it's helped a lot of people just do things that are a little bit more analog, probably.
I just realized I've been, I wanted to ask you about this at the start and I've left it till now. You mentioned kids books. When you sent me, well, I mentioned kids' books that you do, but you sent me the summary of what you do. So, yeah. Have you written a kids' book?
I have, but it's, like, not, it's not, it's literally sitting right here. This is going to be so good for your audio podcasting.
So he's showing a picture of a, it looks like a book called Balloona.
Yeah.
And looks colourful.
It's a book. It's a kid's book. It's real. It's not published. It might never be published. Who knows?
Did you do what? You made it all yourself? You got an artist involved and you did the story?
Got a fantastic artist called Mete Erdogan, who helped me with the illustrations and everything. It basically came about from, it's been like 9 years in the making, hilariously. It's just in terms of where the story came, like started and how it's evolved. It was actually part of my application to get into uni originally. Just started out as like a 9-image short story with no words. They just wanted to see if you could convey like a story just through images. And so I made this thing up with my brother, who was handy at Photoshop, put the photos together, sent it in. And then throughout uni, I would like work on it as a, I think it was a short script at one stage. And then it became a treatment for a kid's book. And then I wrote it as a kid's book and turned all the dialogue, like it turned all of the prose into rhyming couplets and gave it to Mete, who was my roommate at that time. And yeah, we've been just slowly chipping away at it, you know, as you do with kind of side little things, you know, slowly throughout the years. You know, you kind of, it's interesting, you get really excited about it for like a few months and then kind of the passion wanes because you've got other things to do, like you're paying work or whatever it is, holidays. But it's just always been there, like ticking along, and it's in its pretty much its final form right now. But hopefully, it's got one more stage to go, which is that it hopefully gets published. And if not, we'll probably print it ourselves and just work out how to do that.
Yeah, that's nice. That's it.
Yeah,
you really don't like letting go of ideas, do you? First one when you get into uni.
Yeah, this one's staying.
Actually, and speaking of projects like that, because I'm guessing you got a few, like script writing fascinates me because you've mentioned a few things here which I think people don't realize, and it's a very big part of the creative. Maybe it's just me that doesn't realize it, but how long and how much work goes into stuff? Like, you can't just do it casually. Like, it's amazing how much like rewriting and editing and stuff. So it's like, even with a script, it's like you might see a half-hour TV show. I'm currently watching Frasier again. And you're like, this is 22 minutes, but it's like the amount of people involved in writing something like that and the amount of hours, it's very hard for someone to, you might come in and be like, oh, I feel shit because I can only do this version of that. But it's like the amount of, you're just seeing the finished product, I guess.
Yeah.
So related to that, I guess, how much have you had any experiences like that? And are you doing anything like that yourself? Like doing any scripts?
Well, first of all, no one ever shows Frasier enough love. It's one of the greatest sitcoms ever. So people need to get on that.
Oh,
second of all, I think with all of this stuff, I think I've fallen into this industry quite quickly. And so anything I'm saying about it is purely just what I've experienced so far. And I've never done a podcast like this. So it's all coming out and I'm not sure if people will agree with it, disagree with it. It's none of the things that I'm spurting out intended to be kind of gospel, obviously, but I think both with projects in the industry and projects personally, it's that thing that I was mentioning before about time. Like, in terms of like your own stuff, like I've got a few scripts on the go that I would love to tell you, like, oh, I've written for 2 hours every day for the last 4 years since getting out of uni. Like that's the goal, but I think just with anything. That is, it's this really hard thing because it's your passion and you love it and you want to commit time to it, but then you find yourself with a spare half an hour and you're like, oh, I actually really need to like call this mate, or I need to like do the dishes, or I need to go and see my partner. Kind of like it's finding the time and not procrastinating with that time is super. I've found at least is super tricky because I don't know how you feel, but like I get home from work. And I'm like, I've just sat in front of a computer for most of the day, and I get home from work and I'm like, I don't really want to do any writing where I use my brain again. I just kind of want to go like swim or play some tennis or like play some guitar or whatever. So that's been the struggle for me for the last few, I guess, since being out of uni without deadlines, is trying to keep those projects going. And that's why I think something like this kid's book or the podcast, they're good little outlets because it's not right. It is writing a little bit, but it's different. I did improv for a while. I did some musicals. Like, it's just like creativity in a different form, which I think is important.
Yeah, it could be like, how do you feel about that though? Do you want to write something? Like, I guess this is always the big toss up, right? Because like you've obviously got your job and it's great that you're in the industry anyway, so you're getting that already. But obviously, like you said, it's like, how are you going to do it if you don't put the time? And I'm not judging. I'm the same. This is actually a question.
No. I get it, man. I totally get it.
Because especially if you look at the people who like do it every day religiously, and you're like, fuck.
Yes.
I don't do that. So what am I doing? Like, as in,
it's such an interesting point you raised about like, do I actually want to write anything right now? And it's like, I know the feeling of having a story that I love that I want to tell. And that's why I've hung on to this kid's book for 9 years, because I legitimately love the story, as lame as that sounds, because I wrote it. You know what I mean? Like, as much as you can love something that you kind of wrote yourself. And I don't want to sound ungrateful for, I have this crazy job in the industry that I'm like, man, that is not a guarantee at all. You just kind of lucked into that, which is really great. And hopefully you can hold on for it for a bit longer. But at the same time, I think if I didn't have the job and I was just 5 days a week, I think I'd be hustling to try and write more scripts. I think I'd honestly be trying, I'd have the time and have the energy to do that. It's just trying to spin all the plates, I guess, is like, keep the job, but also work on your own stuff a little bit too, and as much as you can. And yeah, it's such a good point you were saying though, about like having something you actually want to contribute or want to say or want to write, like, watching things that have such an urgency to them as well. Does like, it's, you know, watching shows that you can tell the person was like, I need to tell this story. I need to write this. I'm like, what's that for me? You know, like, and occasionally lightning strike. Like, I've got this feature script that I'm working on at the moment that I'm like pretty passionate about. And I think it's growing, like the passion is growing, which is cool. But it takes a while in between those ideas, I think, for me at least, and that can be worrisome. It's not like, I don't subscribe to the belief that like, oh no, all my creativity's gone. Like, you know how some artists are like, I've had this one great idea and it's gone. I think it just, the excitement for those ideas can go up and down, and you can, it's just about having a variety of things to work on at the one time, maybe. Like, I branched out to doing improv a few years ago because it felt immediate. It felt like I was doing something creative that was just done and that's it. Like, rather than sitting in front of a script that won't be seen maybe ever, it was doing something that felt immediate to just calm that, like to just satisfy a bit of the creative stuff. And with the podcast I do, like, I was curious to start one, curious to make one, and the themes that are, and stuff we were talking about, I was interested in what people's kind of worst travel experiences were, just because a lot of the stories I heard were really funny and I wanted to like put them to, you know, down on tape. But it also is scratching an itch a little bit for me of like, oh, it's something that I'm like putting out and like creating, but it's also a little bit lazy in the sense that like the guest does all the talking and then I kind of like put it together and it's like, hey, I did this. It's like, yeah, you just asked someone to tell you a story. It's like, sometimes I kind of catch myself a little bit like that. And I'm like, is this, I mean, at the end of the day, I really like doing it, so who cares?
Yeah, I think that's it. You're kicking yourself on the wrong things by the sound of it. Yeah, that's just like, it's unrelated to that, yeah. To bring it back to the book, actually, let's try this out, see if this goes anywhere. So the other event you did mention as well was the Australian side of Tomorrow When the War Began, because that is a big part of it, the whole like, it's very Australian, it feels like where they hold up, but even the description of the bush and all that stuff, it just feels, that was what was awesome about it as an Australian, because you don't feel like you get that much of that stuff sometimes. Mm-hmm. I feel like, yeah, do you feel like I often find like I don't appreciate the local scene as much of like content in any way, in terms of media, in terms of books or TV or whatever. It's a gap that I try to fill now more so, and music even, for the Australian scene. Firstly, is that something you feel ever, or are you actually pretty good, you're in touch with the scene?
Oh, as in me personally? No, I probably am a pretty bad example of like, I'm probably like a pretty bad example of like content absorption in general. Like, I try and watch a lot of relevant stuff and read a lot of stuff, but I do, you know, fall by the wayside a little bit, just because maybe some nights, I'm not like a binger kind of thing. But I think, as much as I said before about how like the Australian industry is growing and we should be really excited and positive about it, I also think, you know, you've got to be realistic and be like, you can't expect people to watch a product that is subpar, and I'm definitely not saying that Australian stuff is, But I'm saying that occasionally it when it is and when anything is, it doesn't, obviously it you can't complain that people aren't watching it. And the trouble is right now is that we're in a market and a world where we have Netflix and Stan and Amazon and, you know, all these, and Apple TV, all these streamers, you know, putting out really premium stuff onto their stuff. And it doesn't mean like all of it's great, but it's like we're actually, it's not just channels 10, 7, 9, SBS and ABC anymore. It's like the whole world. So, you know, someone overnight can sit down and watch any new episode of like one of the biggest dramas in the world. So we've got to up our game in that sense. So I don't probably watch enough Australian stuff, and I think that's both me and I think
Australia's
that's also
fault.
Yeah, it's the industry that I work in's fault. Everyone I work, all of my colleagues and yeah, just burn the bridges completely. No. It's
I respect
a hard.
It. Why
it's,
not? Yeah, it's got no, juicy.
It's a really hard like mix because I understand why people don't tune in to whatever the show is because they've got so many options.
Yeah, no, I get that. I know. I'd say the same. So, because the other part of it was. This relates because you mentioned your podcast, which is called Unpacked, which is about travel stories that have gone wrong and things like that.
Yeah.
So this is why, for some reason, I don't know why, I'm just like thinking of the Australianness of the, it's uniquely Australian. So almost like a tourist would almost look at something like Tomorrow When the War Began as a quintessentially Australian experience. So it's almost like, if you know what I mean, like a travel story of being in Australia is yeah. Tomorrow When the War Began, if you know what I mean. Yeah. So it's funny. Then you've turned that into like, obviously you're chasing that with your own, this is me stretching hard potentially.
No.
It's very local flavor. Let's put it that way. So is that something you appreciate about other cultures as well? Like the local flavorness of like, is that what you're looking for in these individual stories of travel stories? And I guess, does that extend to general info about other countries, or is it more, it's just hilarious because travel stories are always pissed throwing up in a bucket and getting chased by local police?
Well, that's a really interesting question, man. I think what drew me to the concept, like you said, it's a show that is purely based on my guests' worst or weirdest times overseas. And I think what interested me generally was like when you go overseas, you are planning to either, like, essentially you're going over for an experience. And experiences, like I think this was said in one of the first episodes by one of the guests, when experiences are had overseas, they're like, it's like a supernova of an experience because it's, you don't know the culture very well. You don't know the language probably. You don't know the customs. You don't really know where you are. You know, it's all new. There's so much stimulus going in and pinging around in your head that if something like trips you up in that moment, it can all be really heightened, you know? And so the stories just naturally came out and have come out. I've done three seasons so far. They've all just been really like interesting case studies in like how people deal with when shit goes down in like a foreign land. And there's definitely, like you were saying, the cultural stuff, the benefits of like learning about different customs and cultures, and just, you know, I love putting in, you know, traditional music into the episodes and things like that, just as like an added thing. But yeah, it's really about the stories that come out of it, I think.
Right. And I guess this is, we'll probably finish it off here. And this does tie in. I think I can tie this in. So, and this is the other part. So you've mentioned already, you've had a pretty privileged existence, which I think can sometimes get misconstrued and for good reason as boring in a lot of ways, like as in, and your love of like Tomorrow When the War Began, which is obviously a very action-y book series. And then your love of hearing these stories about people in heightened scenarios and things like that. Do you feel like do you reckon you're chasing that because you want more of that in your own life? Or is that something you look for? Or did you feel like it was lacking when you were growing up? And maybe I assume too much saying boring, but you know what I mean, I think. Emotionally heightened.
No, I definitely know what you mean. That's a really interesting question. I definitely don't think I'm chasing anything in terms of like, I don't want to be like assaulted in like a foreign country or something. I think judging on how I react to like things like that, like it being in a bad situation in the times that I have been, the rare times that I have been, I'm not great. So I think I probably am like more likely to just like enjoy hearing about them and living, not living through those, but I think thinking about contemplating, like I did with the book, about like, how would you deal with this stuff? Like, you know, I don't want to deal with it,
but how would you deal with it?
Yeah. I don't want any part of it, but if, yeah.
You goddamn coward.
Yeah. No, that's, I did have a bit of a sketchy situation over in South America a few years ago. And when I got back to Melbourne, I joined a martial arts gym because I was like, okay, if I ever, you know, it was that classic thing of like, I'm not ready. I need to be ready. And like, and now I've like calmed down a lot because I'm like, you'll be all right. Like, you know.
So you stuck to it?
I've stuck to it. I haven't. Obviously, it's been hard for during COVID being doing jiu-jitsu because it's like the most close contact thing you could ever do.
It's just all breathing in mouths.
Exactly.
Oh my gosh, so you had one bad experience and you were so traumatized. You went and learned martial arts. What the hell is this? I don't even know. Like, tomorrow when the war began was wrong. It's really scary in real life.
Yeah, man. I was like fully just like, nope. Gotta train. I've done martial arts. Yeah, it is a bit dramatic. I did karate as a kid, as a lot of kids do, for a few years, and quite enjoyed it, but was a bit young to like, I think, fully get into it. So I think definitely like having a bit of a scenario overseas where like I mean that's the thing, man. I've done this training and I'm like, I'm so bad, obviously, because I've only done it for like 2 years, but I still would just get out of the situation. You know, I'm not like training up for this stuff to be like, I'm gonna kick the shit out of someone. I'm like, nope, I would diffuse and walk away, kind of thing. Like it's purely
crazy to do anything else unless you were like, well, it's crazy regardless, but especially like unless you're super trained.
But also by the way, that's what our coaches would say as well, like, you know, the best defense is just not getting into any kind of situation like that at all. So I think I would very much be the same. I think I started it very much because I was, it was 2017, I think. And, I was doing my final year of uni. It was honors year and there was not much contact with the school because I wasn't like a full-time student anymore. And so there was just this, literally a gym like two doors down from my house. And I was like, speaking of a cowardice, I was like, you're a coward if you don't at least try it out, because it kind of scares you a little bit. Like I would walk past it and be like, oh, that kind of makes me a bit nervous. And I think I know what I want quite well. So I think the reason it was making me nervous was because I knew that I would go in there one day and I was a bit like apprehensive of that. But I was like, you coward, like go and try it. And I ended up really enjoying it. Just as exercise, even just as that mode. But definitely wouldn't employ it if I was out and cornered by like seven dudes. I'd be like, nope, take my wallet. See ya.
Yeah, it's asking for a lot, I think, in that situation. Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. Okay. So you're not, so vicarious action is more your flavor rather than writing the stories about the exciting things.
I mean, I suppose I definitely don't want to come across as some like vanilla. Like, I definitely don't like shy away from exciting scenarios. I've been like bungee jumping and I love skiing and like all this kind of stuff. But like, yeah, the stories that people have told me, fuck no, like no way. I getting tailed in Africa by like a gang and or being, you know, stalked in Russia or, you know, all that kind of stuff. I'm like, it sounds like it's one of those things that's like in the moment, it's terrifying. But when you look back, you're like, oh, that's pretty, what do you love?
That's living, man. What are you talking about? That's the fun stuff. The terrifying, concerning sort of thing. That's
yeah,
the best
but
stuff.
You don't go and seek it out. Like when it happens, sure. And when you look back on it, for sure. I've got all those memories. I've had a lot of experiences, especially, you know, thinking of Unpacked, like especially overseas, it just kind of happens because you kind of, you know, almost it just is more likely to kind of something going wrong is more likely to kind of cause a bit of, I guess, cerebral, like, oh my God, like this is an experience. This is something new and crazy. I think
adds color.
Know,
yeah.
Adds color. Yeah. No, 100% all in for that. But, I'd love it if you name this episode. Fair. It's like, coward writer. Matt Kazakis, like, hides behind computer.
The, The cop is definitely going to involve you being a coward. Don't worry about that.
cowardly, privileged rider.
Yeah.
Complains about getting his hands dirty for a few weeks while tiling.
Direct quote, I go skiing and bungee jumping, so...
So I'm pretty tough, okay?
I'm pretty tough, all right? I like taking risks in when there's a chalet at the end of it, okay? That's how I like to do my risks. So I think we should call it there because we've gone for a while. So I do like to ask, do you feel like you've found any new connections between you and this series Tomorrow When the War Began?
I think I've learned that it was a bit more important to me than I probably did. And I've also learned that I'm terrified of living. And I'm just going to live in isolation. I'm going to become a hermit. I'm not going to do anything.
What a coward's reaction to finding out he's terrified of living. So I'm just going to hide more. Just avoid more things. That's so I'm glad.
I'm just going to interview people about their experiences, write them down in my journal so I know to avoid.
Yeah. Okay. Well, thanks very much. And thanks for being on.
Thank you, George. And I look forward to doing an ep of Unpacked with you soon.
100%. All right. Cheers.
Thanks for listening. If you want to help support this show and all the other shows we do here at Sans Pants Radio, then why not subscribe to SansPantsPlus.com? For as little as $5 a month, you could have access to a whole bunch of bonus shows and content. Once again, that's SansPantsPlus.com.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And is all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.